Hello, everybody, and welcome to Real Stories. Today, I have three Let's Not Meet type stories for you guys. And if you have any stories that you think might fit the criteria for this show, please email them to me at thearspodcast@gmail.com. That's thearspodcast@gmail.com. Also, make sure to give us a positive review wherever you're watching, and give us a like and tell a friend if you're enjoying the show. All right, let's get to the episode. In a medium-sized apartment building in a fairly major city. While the neighborhood I live in is more on the safe side, gun violence is very high in my city as a whole, and we have a big trafficking problem. Despite this, I feel pretty safe going out, especially close to my apartment building, where it is mostly well lit, and I'm friendly with a few of the regular homeless people. Last night, I got a reminder that my safety isn't guaranteed, and I have been pretty shaken since. Last night, around 12:20 a.m., I asked my partner if he wanted to share a joint with me, and when he declined, I locked the apartment and went downstairs myself. The exit I take spits me out on the main street where there is still occasional cars driving by at this time. Usually this type of human presence comforts me walking late at night, but tonight, a lone, black, dark blue van approached me in my peripheral and started driving really slowly. They were matching my pace until I rounded the corner as the van was stopped at a stoplight. I found it very strange at the time, but the van was on the other side of the street, and there were one to two cars, so I brushed it off. Around the corner, there is a little food truck area with a bunch of picnic tables. They have Christmas lights hung up and a few other ambient lights that are kept on the whole night, but it barely illuminates the area. As I'm walking past the picnic tables, I noticed a large man dressed in dark clothes sitting alone at one of the back tables. He was wearing a hood or a hat, so I couldn't see his whole face, but his eyes followed me as I walked the border of the picnic area. My usual smoke spot is behind a fence on the other side of the picnic area. I was a little shaken by spotting that man, and also didn't want to upset him by smoking near him, so I chose a slightly further spot along the side of a construction vehicle. I lit my joint and started puffing away and reading something on my phone. I soon start getting this uneasy sensation. It felt like all my hairs were standing up and I got the most intense goosebumps that I've ever felt. My phone was still playing music, and as I turned it off, I hear this shifting and rustling on the gravel behind me. I swung my head around and saw a man reaching towards me with huge hands. I caught a glimpse of his face before I fell into the ground. His eyes were wide, bulging, and extremely dark. They terrified me. His mouth was agape and he was basically snarling at me. He scared me so bad I fell to the ground, stumbled, and broke into a run all in 1 second. I ran for a few seconds before I peeked behind my shoulder and saw him a couple yards behind me. At this point, I knew it was definitely the man who was sitting at the picnic table when I first arrived, and I now can say that he was wearing what looked like a dirty bucket hat. He had shoulder-length, dirty, light-colored hair and was way taller than me, so at least 6 foot. He was definitely gaining on me, as I had lost ground by turning around, and I am not in the best of shape to begin with. I was about to reach the first entrance to the building, but the issue was, 1, there were double doors at this entrance that closed quite slowly, and 2, the only way up was up an elevator, so if he gets inside with me, I'm out of luck. I kept running, taking my chances with my running ability and my ability to quickly open doors. I kept running alongside the other side of the building to get to the second, just has 2 single doors which open up to a stairwell to my apartment. It's above the second floor. That's all I'll say because I'm still very scared. As I'm nearing this entrance, I see another man who appears to be speed walking directly towards me from the opposite direction. I should note that throughout this, I've been hearing the growling and snarling sounds of the first guy. And as the second man gets closer to me, I hear him growling as well. I reach the keypad, unlock the door quickly, and slam it behind me. Until I hear the lock click again, the second man reached the first door, and I saw his face more clearly as it slammed against the glass window of the door. He was also tall, with longer hair, and I remember he was wearing overalls, but I mostly remember his wild eyes and his teeth that he gnashed right at me before I turned away, opened the second door, and booked it up the stairs. I did not stop until I was in my apartment, had all the doors locked, and was under covers. I think, in retrospect, I didn't hear any sign of them following me from the stairs, but I was also convinced that they were hot on my tail. I think the only reason I got away from them was that they didn't know about the side entrance to my building, so they didn't expect me to keep running past the first entrance. I get up to get my inhaler. I was nearly having an asthma attack at this point, and I peeked out the window. My heart sank. I saw the same van that had creeped me out earlier parked across the street from the entrance to my building. The entrance is right below my apartment window. I then looked down to see three men pacing alongside of the building, including the two who had just chased me. I ducked down, fearing that they would see me. A few minutes later, they started shining flashlights into the windows of apartments. It's clear that they are searching for me. At this point, I try to call my building manager to let him know about the situation, and he sent out a mass text to all the residents. I was also paranoid another innocent person would be accosted by them, so I called the police. They told me they were on their way and to stay out of view from the window, in case they were armed. A few minutes later, the men are spooked by faraway police sirens, and they get back in their van and peel off. I think it was from a different 911 call, though, because when the officer arrived to our building, his siren wasn't on. I spent a long sleepless night thinking they'd come back, but luckily they never did. I asked one of the homeless guys that I'm friendly with if he had seen anything suspicious that night, but he didn't. They couldn't have been residents because they didn't leave after the manager sent that massive text out to the residents. The part that sticks with me the most, however, is the growling and intense look in the men's eyes. I don't know if they were on drugs or what. They never said a word to me, or to each other. I haven't heard any updates from the cops, but it's only been a few hours, and they didn't seem that interested in my statement, as the van had already disappeared by the time that they had arrived. So to the men who growled at me and chased me into my apartment, let's not meet again. Do you guys ever wonder why there's a negative connotation against trusting men in general? It's because of stuff like this. Goodness gracious, getting chased by three growling men. Is that not like the biggest fear of any younger listener? Like, that is terrifying. First of all, the fact that it ended up being like a small group instead of just one person, terrifying. Because that makes it seem like it was planned. And if it's planned, then that means that this girl or somebody just like her was a target. So another scary thought is, what was going on with these guys? They were not acting very human. They didn't talk to each other. They're acting more like beasts who just growled and made weird snarling noises. This is not normal behavior. I have no idea if these guys were on some sort of drug, but this behavior is strange and scary. So in this story, our poor author is just, you know, trying to go outside and smoke a joint. Really shouldn't be that big of a deal. However, when they go downstairs, they're going outside, and they come across a guy sitting by himself near these picnic tables. Now, our author goes to smoke behind this location. Also, when they go down there, they see a creepy van. So we have creepy van and one person out there seems harmless at the time. Also, this is past midnight, so not that people can't own vans and be great people, but when I see a lone, dark van approaching me, no, I'm going back inside. But that's just me. So next, the author, they lit their joint, and they're just puffing away, reading something on their phone, but they get a real uneasy sensation. And we haven't talked about uneasy sensations and trusting your gut a lot recently, but guys, please never forget to trust your gut. And if you get that internal instinct that just something isn't right and you need to get out of there, then something isn't right and you need to get out of there. There's a reason that your body is telling you this, and you need to listen because it can seriously save your life. So after getting that feeling, they feel like they're hearing something as well, like somebody approaching them. They turn around and there's somebody there, and he's standing there with his eyes bulging, extremely dark, mouth agape, which is weird because if you're just standing there with your mouth hanging open like a snake that just ate something too big, that's scary. And at this point, she realizes
that this is the same guy who was sitting at the picnic table. Nothing like having your fears confirmed. They're being followed at this point. And luckily, these people are not residents, or they're unaware of this other entrance to the building. So our author just books it and runs by the first entrance. Now this probably threw off her pursuer, because there's another entrance that would only be known to people who live there. So luckily, they get in there and they talk to their building manager. They text them. And the building manager sends out a resident-wide text thread to, you know, just be on the lookout, be cautious. There's creepy guys outside growling. Like, what an insane text to get from your building manager. I cannot even imagine. Like, you're just chilling and you get, hey, beware outside. This lady's getting chased by three growling men. Like, what? This is insane. It's like a Twilight Zone episode. So luckily they get to the building. But when they get to the building, another man starts speed walking towards them from the opposite direction. Now, alone, maybe you could just write this guy off as being weird. But given the circumstances, you kind of have to take this guy as a threat. So she runs away from him too, and luckily gets up to her apartment. Around that same time, our author calls the police, which is a great idea because these people got spooked from a siren that ended up not being even related to this case. They just thought that, you know, oh, we're out doing sketchy stuff, so that's got to be for us. Which should be a good clue that you should probably stop what you're doing. However, a cop finally shows up to the apartment, doesn't even have his lights on. So it was a different guy. And the cops didn't really do much because the van that a third guy was driving the van. So the van that these three escaped in was gone by the time the cops got there. So there wasn't much they could do, unfortunately. And it's dark out. She was able to get a somewhat good description of a couple of the people, but at the end of the day, it's going to be tough to identify them in the dark when everything's happening so fast that it's hard to even remember this type of stuff. And if you are remembering it, it's probably trauma-based, and then you can't stop remembering it. So just a very unfortunate situation, but our author was able to get away. So quick thinking, trusting that gut instinct, and knowing when to run. Because you got to know when to run sometimes. Not everybody is worth fighting. Not everybody is just someone that you need to try and talk it out with either. Sometimes you just need to remove yourself from that situation. So kudos to our author for handling that very well. We'll be right back with more creepy stories after this word from today's sponsor, BetterHelp. Hey guys, did you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month? Well, now you do. So how are you feeling? And be honest. If you think that you may be feeling stressed, depressed, anxious, or overwhelmed, you're not alone. And today's sponsor, BetterHelp, is here to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and help you. Talk to your therapist in an online environment at your convenience. And there is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's network of 20,000 therapists that give you access to help that may not be available in your area. You just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you can get matched with a therapist in as little as 48 hours. You can then schedule video and phone sessions, plus exchange unlimited messages with your therapist. You can also request a new therapist at any time for no additional charge. So join the 3 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/realstories. That's BetterHelp.com/realstories. All one word. When I was 10, my parents and I went to visit my grandmother for spring break. My cousin also came to visit, and we decided we wanted to go to the YMCA for the day. My grandmother dropped us off, and she said she would come pick us up in 4 hours. On that day, the YMCA was empty. There was a couple of adults in the exercise room, but that's about it. We went to the basketball court, and after 2 hours of playing tag and shooting baskets, we got bored. I've never been the biggest fan of swimming, but this YMCA had a pretty nice pool, so we changed into our bathing suits and headed up there. The pool was empty, except for the lifeguard. We played a bunch of games and swam laps, but after about an hour, there wasn't much left to do, and there was no one except us to hang out with to keep things interesting. So we decided to play a game to see who could hold our breath underwater the longest. We stood in the shallow end near the clock on the wall so we could time ourselves. Instead of fully submerging, we just stuck our heads face down in the water. We did this a couple of times, and I was winning. On our last round, I felt a tap on my shoulder. I figured it was my cousin giving up and telling me that I won. But instead, it was the lifeguard who told me to knock it off or she was going to have to ask us to leave the pool. Since we were tired of being in the pool, we figured we'd get out, get dressed, and go back up to the basketball court until my grandmother picked us up. We only had 1 hour left anyways, and the water was freezing at this point. As we got out, the lifeguard stopped us and asked if we wanted to go into the sauna to warm up and dry off. The sign said 18 years or older, so of course, we were super excited that she allowed us to do that. She walked us up to the sauna and unlocked the door. The door was glass, and the interior was made entirely out of wood. Inside, above the door, there was a clock, probably to help make sure you weren't in there for an unsafe amount of time. The lifeguard stand was adjacent to the sauna, but if you looked out the door, you could clearly see it. She followed us in and went over the thermometer encased in plastic and unlocked it so she could crank up the heat. I figured that she must have to turn it on each time, so I don't think anything of it. Both my cousin and I were very short girls, so we couldn't see the temperature that was printed on the thermometer knob, but I know that she was turning up the heat. Then, she left and shut the door behind her. I thought I saw her lock the door too, but I thought to myself, why would she lock the door when we might want to get out? I checked the clock and decided we should get out in 10 or 15 minutes. It was already plenty warm in the sauna, but now the room was blazing. It felt nice because I was so cold in the pool. After about 15 minutes, it was starting to get a little bit too hot, and my cousin agreed that we should leave so we can get dressed. I went to turn the knob on the door, but it wasn't budging. I thought maybe it jammed, so I shook it, but it still wasn't opening, and then I let my cousin try. She couldn't get it to open either. We figured the lifeguard would be back in a couple of minutes, so we sat back down and waited. The room was getting hotter now too, and I really wanted to leave. I got up and now started banging on the door and shaking and twisting the knob, trying to get the lifeguard's attention. My cousin got up and joined me. We started screaming at the top of our lungs for her to let us out, but she just stared straight ahead. I don't think there's any way she couldn't have noticed or heard two little girls banging and knocking on this door, kicking and screaming while doing so. Now, we had been in there for about 25 minutes at this point. It was so hot in the sauna that it hurt to breathe. It felt like my lungs were on fire. My eyes and skin were burning. We sat back down to put our towels over our heads because they were still a little damp, and it made it a little easier to breathe. I was so worried about my cousin, as she is a couple of years younger than me. I looked at the clock and saw that we had been in there for 35 minutes at this point. I got up and walked to the door again and saw the lifeguard just staring straight ahead. Again, I tried to get her attention by screaming that we needed to get out and banging on the door as hard as I could, but still, nothing. I was starting to get pretty dizzy, so I went to go sit back down, but the wooden seats of the sauna burned my skin. My towel was completely dry, so I put it underneath me to sit on. My hair was also dry, but I wrapped it across my face to cover my nose, and I squinted my eyes so they didn't burn as bad, but I could still watch if anyone walked past the door. It helped a little bit. My cousin was laying face down with the towel over her head, not moving or saying anything, so I nudged her to make sure she was still okay. She was, but I could tell that we really needed to get out of there soon because she seemed a little bit disoriented. It had been 45 minutes now, and I was extremely nauseous. There was no way that the lifeguard would forget that we were in here, and I thought she would have come back soon, but there was a little voice in my head telling me that maybe she locked us in here on purpose.
Finally, a man walked past the door towards the pool, but for some reason, I just couldn't get up. My whole body was on fire, and I felt so dizzy. Luckily, this man wasn't going to the pool. He wanted to be let into the sauna and came back with a lifeguard. I saw them walking this way and immediately jumped up to grab my cousin. I knew now that she had for sure locked us in there because she pulled out her keys to unlock the door and let the man in. I didn't want to take any chances of us being trapped in there any longer, so as the man was trying to walk in, I was trying to shove our way out. As we were going out, the lifeguard started to shut the door and push us back in with it. The man was clearly confused about what was going on and said, I think they want out. The lifeguard let out a sigh and opened the door fully as we ran out as fast as we could into the changing room.
We only had about 10 minutes before my grandmother was supposed to pick us up. We were both so shaken by what just happened, we didn't say anything to each other as we got dressed or on the car ride home. When we got back to the house, my parents were making us dinner, and I told them the story of what had just happened. They thought I must have been exaggerating, and they didn't believe me. I truly think that woman was going to cook us alive in there. The only bit of doubt that I have is what would happen if we have actually would have died? She obviously would have gotten the blame. What was her endgame? I'm 21 now, but I think about this interaction all the time, and when I'm in small spaces or I get too warm, I still have panic attacks. No one believes this story, and I get it. It's pretty absurd. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to ask for your opinions, but do you think this could have been some crazy misunderstanding? Or do you think she really just left us in there to die? And why? So to the lifeguard at the YMCA, please, let's not meet again. Yikes, guys. I think we can all agree that that was one of the most terrifying stories that we've had so far. So, in that last story, our author is 10 years old, and they're with their cousin. So, they're trying to, you know, just chill on a spring break. So, they decide to go to the YMCA, which, as a kid, super fun times at the YMCA. So, they go and they play basketball, and, you know, they're having fun, and playing tag and shooting baskets. Problem is, they're kids, so they get bored very easily. So after they play basketball, they decide to go and swim. And there's a lifeguard on duty, which is good for that activity. However, that lifeguard becomes very problematic in a very short amount of time here. So after the kids get bored swimming in the pool, the lifeguard stopped them and asked if they wanted to go in the sauna and warm up and dry off. Now, that sauna sign said 18 years or older to go in. So, automatically, it's a little weird. They're too young. They're way too young. It's not like they're, like, 17 and, you know, it's just a cool lifeguard. No, this is not that scenario. A 10-year-old and her cousin who's a couple years younger, so let's just say 10 and 7, they should not be in an 18 or above sauna at all. So, she lets them into the sauna and locks the door behind them. Now at first, our author is just like, I think that she may have locked us in here. That's weird, maybe she forgot to do that. However, at 30 minutes, they're getting very concerned, and our author is, you know, screaming, her cousin's screaming. There's no way you don't hear children this age screaming. It's impossible. Even if you want to avoid it, you still hear it. And I know that from working in customer service, where everybody brings their very annoying, very loud, yelling children in. So this person is ignoring these children's cries to get out because they've been in there almost an hour at this point. And our author's cousin is like face down. Our author, you know, is just incredibly warm. They're too young to be in there for that long. Most people don't want to be in a sauna that long, honestly. And at the way that the lifeguard had turned up the temperature, it sounds like it was steadily rising. So definitely not a safe environment. However, luckily, a guy tries to get in and that's their saving grace because our 10-year-old little hero author knows that this is her chance to escape. And so they are trying really hard to just get past this guy who's trying to enter. And once the guy sees, like, this lifeguard is not trying to let them out. They're trying to keep them in. So at that point, this is like attempted murder, low-key, because what does she think is going to happen? And even the child, in retrospect, looks back on this very good question. What is the game plan here for the lifeguard? There's no way that they're not going to be held accountable for those children dying if that were to happen, or an injury, or anything bad that could happen from leaving them in a sauna. Now, also, you can't avoid their screams, so that just seems like they really wanted to kill these kids for some reason. So hopefully they got that lifeguard out of there ASAP, but something in me tells me that they probably didn't. But that's one of our scarier stories for sure. Attempted child murder is absolutely insane. They didn't do anything. Not that there's anything that they could have done to deserve that, but my goodness. Crazy.
So I was with my father for like 30 minutes, and it was very nice. We arrived in front of the building where I lived with my mother. I said goodbye to him, and I went toward the building. I pushed the button of the intercom so that my mother hears me open the door, and I saw that there was a food delivery driver with his motorcycle parked right next to me. So here comes the problem. I thought that he was going to deliver something to a neighbor. Nothing unusual here, but there was something off. First, delivery drivers in Morocco usually, and I'm not sure if it's like this in other countries, but they have a little box where they store food in to keep it warm. But this guy didn't have one. He was holding the bag of food with his hand while riding the motorcycle. Also, he opened his phone like he was going to check a delivering app, but as I said this, he didn't have a box or the logo of a delivering service anywhere near him. I order from restaurants and fast foods a lot, so I'm used to seeing these delivery drivers, and even talking to them for a little bit, just to try and make them laugh. I know that's a hard job because of the people being jerks, so I try to be as friendly as possible. So I start by saying hi and how are you in Moroccan, and the guy was super nice. He had a great smile and a nice way of talking, but he took time before answering me as if he was lagging. But it's okay, it happens. Maybe he was stressed or preoccupied, so nothing to worry about, I thought. I asked him what door number he is, and he replied, 42. Which is odd because the last door of the building is the 14th. So I told him to check the app, and I tried to watch his phone, even though I'm not next to him. And instead of opening a delivery app, he opened WhatsApp, and didn't even open a chat. Then he said, door 11. And at this moment, I knew something was wrong because I lived at the 12th door, and so the 11th door is right next to me, and I am sure that my neighbors weren't the ones to order, because they were on a trip.
So then I got a little bit stressed up, and I told him that it must be an error because of the reason that I just told you. But he insisted that he go in, and told me that he used to deliver to this address, and that he knows where he needs to go, and he also told me that the customer knows him, and that he asked him to come quick because he liked his food to be as hot as possible. I clearly said no to him, and that I wouldn't let him enter the building, but that I was going to check on the guys on the 11th door to see if they were back from their trip, and if so, I was going to let them know that he was here. I also told him that the guard of the building was usually in the cafe next door, and that he could talk to him as well. I also lied to him and told him that my dad was waiting for me and that I just needed to go home for a second. He was angry at first, but immediately changed his attitude and became friendly again. I asked him to step aside, and then I asked again for my mother to unlock the door, and I entered. I was still nervous, and I was walking towards the elevator when I suddenly got really scared because I didn't hear the door close behind me. I felt so dumb because I could have closed it myself, but at this moment, I wasn't sure if he was entering the building. But at this moment, I was sure that he was entering the building. I immediately started running towards the staircase, and at the same time, he tried to throw the bag that he was holding at me. I don't know why, but he missed. It is at this moment that I am really thinking quickly. I have Crohn's disease, which, in short, is a disease that causes inflammation of the intestines and heavy pain. But according to my doctor, it also explains why I'm an anxious person and why I usually think too much. And so, I already thought in the past of a scenario where I needed to hide from someone in the building. I know, it's weird. But I've come to the conclusion that the underground parking garage is the best place, because it really was large due to the fact that it was shared by four buildings. So I run toward the staircase and I immediately start going downstairs. Before I continue, I need to say that I'm a pretty tall guy, about 6'3", so it's difficult for me to hide quickly. And I run and I hear him chasing me. At this point, I remember that the other buildings have their own doors in the parking lot, so I run towards one of them. I see someone from afar and start yelling, "Call 911 quickly!" But he didn't react and just entered one of the doors. I go upstairs, open the door of the building, and enter the bakery right next to it. Luckily, I find the caretaker, or concierge, I don't know how to say it in English, and I explain to him really quickly what is happening. He immediately got out of the bakery and started chasing him, but he was too far away and was running towards his motorcycle, so we couldn't catch him. I was tired of all that running, but strangely, I wasn't shocked at all. And still, while writing this, I feel a little bit excited about what happened. Am I weird? I'm definitely not going to tell my parents because otherwise they will forbid me to go out alone or take a taxi. I tried to look out for the bag that he tried to throw at me, but it wasn't there anymore. I know I'm selfish for not calling the police, but preferring to not worry about it instead, because they never do anything anyways. That was another very creepy story. See, in most of our stories with delivery drivers, it's been the person who's waiting for their food who has the creepy encounter. But this person was just living at the building where this delivery driver, or supposed delivery driver, was trying to get in. So our author's parents are divorced, and her dad was dropping her back off at her mom's apartment building. Now, when she's waiting for her mom to unlock the door, she sees this guy who is claiming to be a delivery driver. However, a lot of the delivery drivers typically have a bag of sorts to try and keep the food fresh, make sure that it stays warm, that sort of thing. However, this guy didn't have one. He was holding on to his bag via his hand while driving on this motorcycle. So eventually he tries to get our author to try and help him in the building by saying that he needed to get in unit 42. Now, the girl is very smart, and she knows that there is no 42 and that the highest number in the building is 14. So she immediately starts to get bad vibes from this guy. Couple that with the fact that he is missing what she believes to be an essential piece for a delivery driver, and you got a suspicious scenario. So he then fake checks his phone because she sees that he doesn't look at any sort of delivery app, and he changes his answer and now requests to get into door 11. Now, our author lives near door 11, and she says, oh, okay, well, I'll go check on them because if they're here, they just got back from a trip because they're not supposed to be here. But if they are, I'll let them know that you're here. So she's kind of calling him on his bluff, which very brave for a little 16-year-old to be doing this, because if he's a fake delivery driver, then that means that he's a real-life scammer of some sort. So I'm not sure the safest option to do this, but I mean, I respect the ability of not caving and letting this guy into the building, because who knows what he's up to. So immediately she tries to run away after getting these weird thoughts, and the guy actually throws a bag of his at her, which misses. But our author knows, because they overthink a lot, which sometimes, like in this case, is a good thing, has thought about this scenario before of like, if I'm in this building, not in my apartment, and I need to get away, where can I go? And they decide to go down to the parking garage. And luckily, when they're down there, they kind of see an exit and go over to the next building and contact the landlord. Now, with the landlord, they both try and chase this fake delivery driver away. And he does end up getting away, but he doesn't really get inside the building. Now, our author asks if they're kind of weird for having this whole little experience happen to them and them like it. A little bit, but that's okay. You're making the most out of the situation, so you can't be too mad at them. And they really weren't too concerned with calling the police because apparently in Morocco, they have really bad police. And I think we've actually heard that in another story. So shout out to everybody listening overseas, especially those people in Morocco. But I know that we have a big foreign listenership, and that's awesome. So keep that up, guys. Alrighty, guys, that's going to do it for episode 47 of Real Stories. This week you have heard Chased by Growling Men by Humble-Moose-6309. Then, I Was Almost Cooked Alive by BobbyBrown666420. And finally, I Escaped a Fake Deliverer by K2_Coma. All stories were read with the permission of their respective authors. If you have a story that you'd like to hear, email it to me at thearspodcast@gmail.com. Please remember to go to betterhelp.com/realstories for 10% off your first month of therapy. If you're thinking about giving it a try, I highly suggest BetterHelp. Thank you guys again so much for listening, and I will see you next week with a brand new episode. Until then, stay safe.